Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Adrian Clark, the tactical analyst, and David Priest, goalkeeper, coach, and columnist. So, a new season's upon us. Will it be the same old story? Top six set in stone, and the rest delighted to make up the numbers? I hope not, but let's be honest, last season was a one-horse race. Will Liverpool run them close? What do you think?
I sincerely hope that they'll be much closer. I hope we get a tighter race this time around. We didn't last year. That was the one disappointment. What we were treated to last year was a very special performance from one team, that Manchester City. Their consistency, the quality of their football was outrageously good. Hopefully, we'll see two or three teams produce outrageously good football over the long haul. And Liverpool look best equipped, don't they? They're very settled in the Klopp way. Their recruitment this summer looks first class. And having got to the final of the Champions League, they should now have the belief that they are good enough to win the Premier League. The question mark is defensively, away from home in particular. Are they resilient enough? We'll find out over the coming months. But yeah, I would be excited if I'm a Liverpool fan ahead of this campaign. It's looking pretty good.
Jurgen Klopp's talking about the danger of expectations spiralling out of control. That comes with the territory, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, expectations real, I think. You know, it's a genuine option for them to push for the title this year, and think that maybe he's overachieved a little bit getting to the Champions League final last year, but the football that they play was thrilling, and you know, the games against Manchester City typified that as well. And not only have they've improved the starting 11 immensely in my eyes with Alisson and Fabinho, Keita, but also now they've got a strength in depth. You know, you're looking at they might, as well as Jordan Henderson's played at the World Cup for England, he played last season, could find himself on the bench at times. You know, and it will give them a lot more options should games not be going their way.
You know, in this modern football world, we always concentrate on the managers or the head coaches, don't we? And Klopp seems to have captured the spirit of what's quite an emotionally intense club.
Yeah, I would agree.
Is this his key season?
Is this his key season? Well, it is a key season because he's now known as the bridesmaid, isn't he? He's the choker that does ever so well. And then when it comes to the crunch time, he can't win the trophy. And he will personally be really determined, I'm sure, to get to climb to the summit this time around. And as a team as well, they probably need to put some silverware on the table, don't they? Because it's all well and good, as we've seen with Spurs, to get the praise, to be loved by people, especially the neutrals. But you only get one career and you want to win stuff, don't you? And Liverpool are good enough to win things, no doubt about that. So, yeah, they drew a lot of games, didn't they, last year? And if they just turn those draws into victories, they can challenge City. And we saw when they played City, actually, there's not a huge gulf between the two of them when Liverpool are on it. And they've got a lot of good young players as well that you would think will kick on this year and be even better. So, very exciting times.
What about, if you look at the Manchester City, assume that they are favourites, where can they get better?
Can they?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think there's probably always going to be question marks defensively, really. Even though, I mean, they were brilliant last season. Edison was the most protected goalkeeper in the league.
That's because no-one had the ball the whole time.
Well, this is it. This best form of defence. Other teams can't score if you've got the ball. But, you know, you look at kind of Otamendi, the injury worries over company, constant injury worries over company. John Stone seems to have matured through this World Cup as well. So, possibly there, and you think Mahrez comes in and you think, well, was he really needed? I can't look beyond them. But what we have got this year, and what might make it a more of a title race, is that you've had a lot of the bigger clubs, they've got a lot of players have been away at World Cup, and they have had a great deal of preparation time. But also, we're talking about the managers. I think Klopp, Guardiola and Mourinho are all without their lieutenants. They're all without their number twos for the first time in a long time now. So it'd be interesting to see how they adapt to that as well.
Definitely. And it might make a difference how teams approach games against Manchester City. Last year, I think they were just in awe of them too much. They were blown away.
Basically, let's lose 2-3
now. I mean, the Chelsea game just is one that I thought was a low. Mm. The way that Chelsea basically just gave up the ghost. They start walking around, don't they? I mean, this year, I would hope those teams that were battered by City last year will think, well, there's no point doing that again. Let's actually fight fire with fire here. Let's try and get in their faces. Let's not be afraid to press them and to win it in good areas. Because Man City will take chances, and I think you can score goals against them by pinching it off them inside their own defensive third with the likes of Stones maybe overplaying. Just want to see a bit more bravery. And if teams are braver against City, they might drop more points. That's the hope, I think, for the neutrals this year.
They need to find that chink. In Pep's first season, they started the season exactly the same way. They started from fire. And then they got to the Manchester Derby and Claudio Bravo came in and he made a mistake. And then people smell blood. Mm. So they think, oh, well, we can press them high. And people got success of it. Mm. And I think that's what has to happen this year.
Edison, Brazil number one.
Yeah.
Alisson, who's the best?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I'll go with Taffarel really here. And Taffarel thinks that Alisson is the better of the two. Mm. He's been a long time fan of him. And even from only seeing him a few times back in Brazil, in Internacional, he thought this is where the future of Brazilian goalkeepers. Now they're blessed. They've got Cassio as well, you know, so...
Edison would be number one anyway, would he, apart from Brazil?
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of, I thought he was a game changer in terms of what he could do with his distribution last year. I mean, it's just ridiculously good. The best keeper I've ever seen, personally, with the ball at their feet. I think all this talk about Fernandinho, that he got a backup. I'd stick him in central midfield. I think he'd be just fine. Yeah. I mean, he's that good. He is that good. But I'll bow to David's judgment.
It was interesting, incidentally, that they tried John Stones in midfield for about 10 or 15 minutes, didn't they, in the Community Shield?
It could be something that works. I've always had my doubts about John Stones, and I don't want to have doubts about him because I want him to be a brilliant centre-half for club and country. I want him to be turn himself into the next Bobby Moore. But even though he had a very good World Cup, I wouldn't get too carried away. I think there's still a lot of bad habits in this game, and I'm still not sure about his defensive nose. This is a big season for John Stones. He has to cement his place in City's first 11. If he can't, then he might have to move on.
So, David, in this modern world, ultra-competitive, is it possible to win the Premier League and the Champions League in the same season?
Yeah, I think so. They showed last season that it's not impossible. It wouldn't be impossible for them to go through the whole season unbeaten in the Premier League. It's just those crucial games at the end of the Champions League and in the latter stages. They need to find a way to get beyond that semi-final stage, which they did a couple of seasons ago. I think that as long as they're keeping the same role as they were last year, anything's possible with City.
Yeah, they blew it, didn't they? Let's be honest. Yeah. I mean, last year. I mean, they're unlucky, I suppose, to draw Liverpool, who probably just stylistically had an advantage against City in terms of it just works for Liverpool against City. It's like they're kryptonite. But yeah, I think the football they produced was the best in Europe. Yeah. It was better than Real Madrid. They were a better team than Real Madrid, in my opinion. Mm. So that was one that got away.
So if you're looking at other runners and riders, let's look across the City at Manchester United. Yeah. Jose Mourinho, is he almost now becoming past his sell-by date?
I'm sure you asked me this last year, probably the year before. But he got second last year, and we shouldn't ignore that. He did improve them. OK, they weren't great to watch. It just feels like this third season syndrome, whatever you call it, is kicking into gear, doesn't it? And the morale is poor. They're going to be hard to beat. They've got the players to finish second again, no doubt. But I just don't know. I feel like the end game's coming. I do. I think when you are clearly at odds with the CEO, Ed Woodward, then something's got to give. And also the morale of the players is something to consider. And the whispers are that the United squad are are down in the dumps. Managers do set the tone, don't they, David?
Yeah, of course. And I just think that's, the stuff with Martial, it can have a knock-on effect, and people say, well, if he can be treated this way,
yes,
there's nothing that say that I can't be treated this way. And even like Sir Paul Pogba, you know what I mean? There's the noises coming out and the remarks that he makes about him that, I don't know, that nobody's protected from his barbs. It seems a troubled camp. And for a club like that, where you think, well, there's so much that could be better and so much that's going wrong, that you think, well, even though they were second last year, have they got a chance of being top?
Yeah, has he been so good, Jose Mourinho, that the board will back him no matter what in terms of who he wants to sign, in terms of who he wants to get rid of, in terms of when he is at odds with the player, whose side do they take? Has he been so good that they think, well, Jose, we've got to back Jose, he's indispensable? In my opinion, he hasn't. Mm. Even though he improved their league position, no one seems happy. Fans are certainly not happy. Mm. They want to see better football. So you feel that the next big blow-up, if the board do not back Jose, it could all kick off and he could go.
Because the mind games, if you want to call them that, they're just so obvious now, aren't they? You know, he's talking about, you know, we've had a difficult pre-season, we're going to have a difficult season ahead. OK, so he's playing down expectations, surprise, surprise. But it's just too obvious, too transparent, isn't it?
It's like it's almost like the boy who cried wolf. You just switch off to it, you know, and it doesn't have an effect. And you think, just concentrate on the football. You know, forget about all the histrionics, all the drama. Just get on with the football, deal with what's going on the pitch. Because, like I said, there's so much around the team that needs to be rectified. I said before about the defensive team who aren't good at defending. they've got two... they play two wide men as full-backs. And fullbacks are, you know, such a crucial part of football these days. You've got Sanchez, who's been used as to provide instead of score the goals when it should be the other way around. And
If Manchester United do get this pride centre half, someone that really really improves them, a Toby Alderweireld, shall we say, then most managers in Jose's position might then free the shackles of the players ahead, because what's happened, to put in a nutshell, is that he's not trusted his back four, so he's protected them by playing a very negative brand of football. If he gets a back four he can trust, and that means bringing in a real top-class centre-half, in theory, he should then play a much more expansive brand of football. Will it happen? We're all waiting to see. I just don't know. The old Jose would have. The old Jose, his teams were brilliant to watch, weren't they? So fast on the counter. Can he recapture that magic at Old Trafford?
I don't think, to the opposite effect of what Van Dijk has had at Liverpool. There was a noticeable difference in the second half of last season defensively, with the chances that they gave up. Mm. I don't think another centre-half will make any difference to Man United. Mm. Simply because, like I said, they defend in numbers, but ineffectively.
You both know how dressing rooms work. In the context of United players being unhappy or perceived being unhappy with the way Mourinho is managing, how important will Michael Carrick be as a sort of go-between?
Yeah, I think he could prove invaluable, simply because of the character that he is as well. You know, he's very likable, and I'm sure there's got to be a little bit of distance now between him and the rest of the players, but obviously he's got that relationship anyway. I think he could be very important, but I think that I cannot see for the life of me that Jose Mourinho is the same in the dressing room as he is in front of a camera. I can't see it, because normally you see the opposite. There's a great clip of the documentary for Manchester City where in the dressing room and Pep saying, until my last days here, I will protect you from them outside, but I'm going to be honest in here. And it seems to be the other way around. He's been too honest in front of the cameras.
Yeah, I've said that before. I've said I don't believe that he's like that, that behind the scenes he must be much more of a motivator and a happier character around the training ground. But the whispers I'm hearing is that he's not. Mm. And the mood is quite sombre. And let's be honest, he's digging out... He basically just wrote off half of the professional playing staff that he took on tour to America and said, well, this isn't my team. Mm. So, he's basically just cut off 15 young players that are dreaming of making it this year. Basically, they now think, well, you don't really want me. So I think that has to have an effect. But going back to your original question, I think that is a really good appointment, Michael Carrick. All he's got to do is use him, though. Will he use him? Will Carrick have much of a say? But if the players feel they can lean on Michael, to get their points across without having to speak to Jose direct, that could be a way to make the pathway smoother.
Is that something that Mourinho's used to do in bringing former players in? Because off the top of my head...
Well, no, he had Rui Faria with him for 15 years, probably.
Yeah, a long time. And I just know that, you know, with Pep bringing in Mikel Arteta, you know, it seems to have...
Yeah, similar. Yeah, similar.
Mikel Arteta could have been Arsenal manager.
He could,
You know, you're around the club quite a lot.
Yeah.
What's the mood like under Emery?
Yeah, optimistic. I think there's massive changes from what we're hearing at the training ground. Culture's changed. It just needed to. I think it came to the point where you just need a fresh voice, some new ideas, a lot of changes, not just in Emery, but it's brought big, you know, backroom staff. And by all accounts, they're very enthusiastic. They are vocal. They're pushing the players. They're driving them really, really hard. They'd got into sort of a bit of a comfort zone. I think we all recognise that in recent years under Arsene Wenger. And, yeah, it's exciting times. I think the players are buying into it. And the one thing I expect Unai Emery to bring to the Arsenal team is structure. That was what was missing from them in recent years. And he will organise them. And when I talk about structure, I mean structure in possession, much less off the cuff, and without the ball, their discipline will be greater, I believe. So, yeah, it's going to be tough. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, but the vibes are good ahead of the new campaign. And look, even though they've got City and Chelsea first two games, Arsenal, that is the best time to play those two teams. They might lose them both, but they are the best times to play City and Chelsea.
What about the goalkeeping situation?
Very interesting. Yeah, the issue here is I would have said Leno was nailed on number one because of the transfer fee, but Petr Cech probably outshone him in pre-season. He was fantastic against Chelsea, and he's been really good with his feet during the pre-season friendlies. Because this is one visible difference, is they're trying to play a little bit like Manchester City, inside, in and around their own box. They're playing their way through the press very confidently, and the goalkeepers are much more heavily involved. Now, Leno is good at that, but Cech has proved during pre-season he's pretty good at it as well. So look, based on form, you might say Cech will start the season, but hand on heart, I just think when you've bought a keeper for that amount of money, you pick him.
But your assessment of Cech, would you play him?
I would. I mean, Leno's come off the back of a very average season back in Germany. Maybe he's not a dip, but his progress has levelled off a little bit. And I think that I've always been in the opinion the last couple of seasons when there's been criticism of Petr Cech. I think a lot of it's down to the change going from Chelsea to Arsenal and the different defensive styles. He's been left a little bit more exposed than he was at Chelsea. You know, he had people, you know, Cavalli or Terry on the edge of his box, throwing bodies on the line, making sure that people weren't getting through. It was a little bit more looser with Arsenal, a bit more space in front of him to defend. So it means, you know, you've got to do a lot more work. Decision-making's got to be better. And it's probably taken a little bit while to adjust to that as well.
He's had a weakness from long-range shots for a while. He's been a little bit slow to get down to them. So that is the one obvious sort of consistent weakness. Yeah, but look, the two very good keepers, and I think the shirt is definitely up for grabs. I hope Leno can come in and shine, because even though I'm a big fan of Petr Cech, I do think that there are a lot of sceptics within Emirates Stadium on a match day. Mm-hmm. I think if you were to ask the 60,000, let's say the 60,000 Arsenal fans in the game, I think 45,000 of them at least would have said, yeah, I want a new keeper. So with that in mind, I believe that Leno will probably play.
Well, let's look at Chelsea then. Sarri's come in. You know, you look at that performance in the Community Shield. Very poor, really, wasn't it? Now, do you read too much into that?
It's less than 7 days before the first game of the season, so, I mean, you've got to read it somewhat. I mean, over the course of pre-season, I've played so many pre-seasons where everything's gone wrong and you start the season well and the opposite.
Yeah, definitely.
So only time will tell with that. Just think, defensively, yesterday they looked really leaden-footed. Mm. They looked as if they stand off, especially if Sergio Aguero gave them far too much space. Mm. And that'd be a worry for me. And Willie Caballero as well.
Yeah.
You know, he looks like he hasn't recovered from his World Cup either. So it'd be important that the Courtois saga, whether that goes one way or the other, and whoever they get in to replace him, should he go, that's going to have a huge bearing on their season.
Yeah, got to sort out their keeper issue. The one thing I would say from a tactical point of view is that they're so used to playing with three at the back, suddenly it's four. Mm. And they did appoint him, let's remember, in mid-July. I mean, they left it pretty late. Mm. Now, you can argue they did that for financial reasons or whatnot. with the dispute with Conte, but it's hurt them because he should have been in on July the 1st drilling these players in the art of 4-3-3. And I worry that he hasn't got a natural centre-back partnership at the moment. He clearly wants to go with Luiz and Rudiger to start with. That's the start of the last two games. Luiz, for me, has to play in the three. I just don't trust him. And Rudiger is a decent defender, but again, I think better in the three. So that's going to take some getting used to.
But it's a recurring question with Chelsea. Will the manager be allowed to manage?
This time, yeah, sure.
I mean, so? Yeah, but I mean, the thing, okay. Because what
influence will he have in the transfer?
Well, Roma's given up on it, hasn't he? I mean, Roma is not interested anymore, is he?
Will he get his own players in, is what I'm saying. Okay, he's done that once with Jorginho.
Well, he's running out of time.
I think the difference got, you know, when they've had the likes of Ancelotti in before, they've had Conte. Italian coaches, they're taught to be very adaptable.
Yeah.
And that's what they can do. They can be very fluid with their systems and personnel. Sorry comes in. He's got a very clear idea of where he wants to play. Obviously, he's been allowed to bring Jorginho in, which is a bit of a somebody to help carry that out on the pitch. But defensively, I mean, I'm surprised I haven't been linked with Koulibaly at Napoli.
Well, he's just signing a new contract, isn't he?
Is that right?
New 5-year contract,
yeah,
well, that's I think.
Why I
don't worry about the midfield. I think Jorginho's a fantastic player. OK, it might take him a few weeks to get used to the pace of the Premier League, but he will be really good at the base of midfield. You've got Conte, one of the best world winners in the world, great legs. He can be a box-to-box guy. And then you've got one other spot up for grabs. Fabregas still can do a job. Loftus-Cheek is there now. He can definitely do it. Ross Barkley's hungry. I wouldn't expect him to play. But they've got a lot of players there that can fit into the 4-3-3. I'm a bit surprised they've given Pedro a new contract. I would have maybe upgraded there. Maybe need a faster centre-forward as well. But I just think he'll get it right. I think he's a really good coach.
I find it really interesting that Sarri praised Barkley after Wembley. Mm. Where, to be honest, he looks a player to be lost to me.
When I saw him on a few occasions last season, that's exactly what he looked like. He looked like he was unsure of his positioning, didn't know where he was supposed to be, and his game suffered because of that. And I think it's just... It's good that he's come out and praising him, of course it is. And he'll probably give him a little bit of a lift from that, but I don't know.
Not going to play, is he? Not going to play. I think that was one of the worst decisions in terms of where a player chooses to join. I just thought Barkley's decision to join Chelsea was an awful one. Mm. Plenty of clubs would have built a team around Ross Barkley, but Stamford Bridge, he's a nobody. He's going to be right on the periphery again, I fear.
We've not even mentioned Danny Drinkwater.
No.
England national before he went there as well, you know, so it's...
Yeah, it's been a graveyard for a lot of midfielders of late. Yeah. But
well, speaking of which,
he will improve players.
Should Loftus-Cheek then be a lot more proactive and basically say, play me... We'll get rid of him.
Well, I didn't know. This is too early. It was not, no time. Yeah. Did he come on in a Community Shield? He came on in the game against Arsenal late on. He's not... Obviously, he's come back from the World Cup, so he hasn't had much chance to impress. For me, I think he would work really well in a Sarri team because he wants those two number eights to bomb on. He's a great runner with the ball. He's really powerful. He can get around the pitch. I think he's tailor-made to be a star in the Chelsea team, and I think that Sarri will improve him. But... You know, will he get the chance?
Mm. Spurs, you know, not afraid of young players. Do they need a trophy now?
Well, don't let them off the hook. Every year, Mike says Arsenal need a trophy. They win trophies, and it's still not good enough. But Spurs are exempt.
That's you getting defensive. I don't think so, and I think they will be there. I think they'll be in the top three this season. I know we're going to do our predictions later on, but I really do think they'll be in the top three this season. And I do not think it's a bad thing that the lack of transfer activity, they're going to the new stadium, as well as getting the new, being familiar with new surroundings. They're not going to have a lot of new faces to integrate, to get used to playing with players already there. So I think it's a positive thing that they've got the continuity there.
Mm. At the start of the show, I talked about top six staying the same, set in stone.
Yeah.
Can you see anyone breaking into that top six?
No chance. No. I mean, did you see the points gap last year? I just don't see it. No, I think they've really pulled away. Since Leicester won the title, the big six sort of got their act together, didn't they? Hopefully it'll be a more interesting battle, isn't it, for the top six with some interchanging of places. But, yeah, I just think none of the other teams are anywhere near in terms of quality or depth. So, obviously, you've got that chance for someone to do a Leicester. It's not impossible, but... if you ask me to pick one, I can't. I genuinely can't. I think like a Wolves or West Ham might really sort of exceed expectations this year, but I can't see a breach of the top six.
Mm. What about Leicester? Can Leicester do a Leicester? they doubled down, haven't they, on Claude Puel?
As well as Wolves, I think they might... Not that, I mean, the Premier League, they've won the Premier League before, so it's been a surprise, but I think they'll definitely improve on last season, the last two seasons. I think it was the 13th and 12th last two seasons. They'll definitely improve. Defensively, they haven't been great. I know we probably think of them as a defensive side, but Puel's tried to open them up a little bit more. At a cost defensively, they've brought in Johnny Evans, who's a great signing. Pereira, one of the best right backs in Europe, who could play for any of the top six sides.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, I like him a lot. They've lost Mahrez, but I don't think that's a bad thing really for them. And I think I really think that this season that those defensive qualities and additions can go maybe 8th or 9th.
On that, there's only one player in two of the last three seasons that's gone into double figures for goals and assists in the same season, and that's Riyad Mahrez. I think they'll miss him. But they've signed Gezal. I know where you're coming from, but because you always think he's an enigmatic player. But he has delivered in two of the last three seasons big time. And you take that amount of goals and assists out of a team, it's a problem. What I will say is that James Maddison, the kid they've brought in from Norwich, I think he's a really terrific player. I mean, you see the goals he scored last year. Real great goals, weren't they? If he can deliver on his talent and is given a chance to play regularly, he might be the new Mahrez.
They haven't had that player. Yeah. They haven't had a playmaker. And obviously, Puel wants them to play a little bit more. Like I said, at a cost defensively, now they've showed up at the back and they've got Maddison. I think he really can't...
But you want players in there who've got renewed ambition. Because let's face it, if you're 32 and you just won the Premier League a couple of years ago, you're not going to get any better, are you? So are we seeing the team sort of naturally regenerate?
I think it's freshening up. I think actually probably the biggest problem for Leicester is the manager is boring. Claude Puel, he's dull. I'm assuming on the training ground he's a much more vibrant character than he is
his press conference in the media. Pure mogadon,
But I also think that tactically he's just boring. He's not expansive. He's definitely safety first. And we've got good talents like a Maddison, and you've got players like Vardy that can win you games. You just wonder, is he going to extract the best out of his attacking players? That's the one fear I've got for Leicester, but they should do well.
Yeah. First BT Sport live game of the season is Wolves against Everton. What do you expect to see there?
I'm hoping that we see Wolves come flying out the traps. We talk about the one surprise team. I do hope it's them because I think they're going to be so enjoyable to watch. The manager's intriguing to me. He spent sort of much of his career as a number two goalkeeper, so I've got some affinity with him now. He's a real thinker, and we talk about Conte and Ancelotti adjusting to the.
But he's lively, isn't he?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's got again like a Jukanovic. He's got an intensity there, and but he adjusts everywhere he's gone, every club he's managed. He's adjusted to what he's got there, and then so he's got this kind of like 3-4-3 formation. That now he's built on that with obviously the acquisitions from Mendes United, but it's it's really exciting, and I mean you've got people like Connor Cody as well, who fits in that system great, providing the extra defender.
Definitely.
Going into midfield. It's just going to be really exciting, and I think Everton they've got to be wary. I mean, you see that Marco Silva in pre-season already in the post-match interviews. He's got the look of a worried man already.
Pre-season's got badly for Everton.
Yeah,
but we've all been in pre-season where you've been rubbish, and then it's.
But they were getting hammered, weren't they?
Yeah, it's not been pretty for Everton. I mean, you based on form and momentum and everything, you'd say that Wolves should beat Everton. But if you cast your mind back to Marco Silva when he came in at Hull, pretty instant response. Then it tailed off. Watford last year. Fantastic at the start for the first few months, brilliant. It tailed off. You kind of think, is that going to happen? If that doesn't happen at the start, if they don't get off to a fast start and then it tails off, maybe Everton could go backwards. So I do think he expects to hit the ground running. Tough opener for Everton, really is.
Yeah, and also I think if you look at that club, it's almost been sold the dream. We're going to be the challengers. We're going to be the ones who break into the top six.
Yeah.
They're miles away from that.
Yeah,
but, yeah. I mean, you see the side that actually got them in the top six under David Moyes. You know, it wasn't sort of like the like big names, expansive football. He got through there through hard work and grit and determination. It's one of those, like, you know, when people keep saying to me about the likes of Manchester City and say, yeah, well, they're buying the way at the title. There's a lot of teams who have pumped money into football clubs and managers have spent money and not got anywhere near. Mm. You know, so you still got to give credit to those teams who are spending well.
The identity's just not been there. Under Moyes, they were always fast tempo, gritty, hard to beat. Under Martinez, much more expansive. Under Koeman, it sort of was a bit of a mishmash. And then, and under Allardyce, they were super defensive, just negative. So what are they going to be? I think they just need to marry, don't they? Being tough to beat, because that's the Everton way, fighting, but also having that boldness to go and attack teams. This is Everton. Everton in a Merseyside derby last year at home to Liverpool, who were depleted. They rested pretty much their whole team. Everton were happy for a nil-niller. That culture has to change, and it will under Silva. But are they good enough to be good at both ends of the pitch?
I think brands plays a big part in this.
The sporting director.
Sporting director, simply because now that he's in there, they can have an identity and they have some sort of continuity. Like I said, they've jumped around different styles, they've played different managers. We probably, in English football, up to now, up to recent years, we probably thought sporting director of football isn't a good idea because it doesn't work straight away. You know, the first appointment isn't a good one, then it's just scrapped. There needs to be sort of a philosophy through your sporting director, through your director of football, and that has to be held to. So that, you know, like I said, your first appointment might be the best one, but as long as the improvement as it goes on and there's a clear vision, then that's exactly what's needed, Evan.
Yep. Mm.
Burnley were the breakthrough team last season.
Yeah.
Is Sean Dyche being given the tools to continue the job?
Well, he sounds like bumping your contract, didn't he? And then, yeah, he's not been back with huge funds, although they did sign Ben Gibson, which is an interesting one, isn't it? Because me and Tarkowski were terrific last year, weren't they? Does that mean they're going to go at three at the back, or is me going to be shunted to left back? I wonder. It'd be fascinating to see what happens there. Yeah, it's going to be tough, isn't it? Because if they do make it into the Europa League group stage, you wonder that they haven't got that depth to rotate. So are the players going to be able to maintain it? Yeah, I do fear a bit for Burnley, but then this time last year I probably said they'd go down and they finished seventh. Dyche is great. We all love Sean Dyche, but it's not been the most ambitious summer, is it, at Turf Moor?
No, it's the nature of the club to a degree. You know, against your old club, Aberdeen, what was your sort of progress report on them?
I wasn't impressed with them at all, and I think that was because they had to change their game to a certain extent. Yeah. They had to come out a little bit more. They had to show a little bit more ambition. And it just didn't quite work with them. And in the end, especially in the first leg up at Pittodrie, the second half they just put Sam Vokes and Chris Wood up front and kind of just became a little bit more physical. I think when it comes to getting the ball down play, they could have done it a lot more. They had a chance to do it a little bit more. In Aberdeen, where I were unlucky to go out, I thought they'd maybe deserve more from it.
Because they've got more respect from opposition teams now, there is a chance that Burnley will have more of the ball. And you're right, when they have more of the ball, they don't always look at the most comfortable. It's like, have they got the players to really be good in possession? That's the challenge for Sean Dyche. And if he can nail that and really improve them on the ball and make them more creative without sacrificing the defence, then his stock as a coach, well, in my head and in most people's heads, it will go through the roof.
They've got players who can put a foot in the ball. They've got Jack Cork, lovely footballer. And I think the goalkeeping situation is an interesting one there because of the injuries that they've had. And there's some talk about Joe Hart possibly going there as well. Mm-hmm. And as Lindegaard did very well, considering he hasn't played much.
Yeah, I think the reality is, though, probably half the teams are fearing relegation. Mm. The ones coming up, let's take them one by one. Cardiff. Neil Warnock, well, we know what we're going to get from Neil Warnock, probably the most direct team since the crazy gang.
Yeah, maybe.
What about the chairman? Has he hedging his bets? Because they haven't spent an awful lot of money, have they?
Not loads. I mean, Bobby Reid, I think, is worth a punt. He was really good, I thought, in the Championship last year. And he gives them something different up top. It was all about, wasn't it, the big guy last year and feeding off scraps and second balls. Do you know what? I think sometimes Neil Warnock is labelled a bit unfairly. I watched a bit of Cardiff last year. Yes, they're abrasive. Yes, they do go very long.
Oh, they bomb it in.
Oh, they boom it. But actually, what they do, they boom it to the final third. Once they're in the final third and they hold the ball up, then he really does encourage flair and imagination, and he likes to have talented players. He's bought Murphy, hasn't he, from Norwich, yeah, who is a bit of a match winner that can do that kind of thing. Bobby Reid's of the same ilk. So let's watch this space. I don't think they'll be as ugly as people are trying to portray. The issue is, have they got the players to score enough goals? And when I look at the squad, I still have my doubts. But we said that about Huddersfield, and they sort of just about got over the line. So, but Neil Warnock has never really done it in the Premier League. I'd love him to this year. I really would.
Yeah. Huddersfield, would it be sort of third time unlucky? You know, they came up surprisingly. They survived even more surprisingly, according to most people. What are they going to be like this season?
I don't know if this is the fourth season, because, I mean, did he not keep... He sort of kept them in the Championship the season before, so it's... I mean, I'm impressed with them simply because, like we talk about philosophies, having a clear way of playing, they've got that. And then I think they've actually bought well this summer. Like Kongolo from £20 million from Monaco.
Comes to something when Huddersfield paid £20 million.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. from where they've come. I mean, do you know what I mean? When they were in League One, they were probably underperforming for a long time because they had the biggest budget in that league, and it took them a few attempts to come up using that budget. But now they're in there, and obviously they've got the renewed money from being in the Premier League and staying up. They've got a chance, and you can't help but like the manager either. Mm. Like I said, he's maybe diet Jurgen Klopp, but he's
their best player, isn't he, Wagner? Yeah. I think he's their best asset. A little bit of Rafa at Newcastle. He's the star man for Huddersfield. I worry about the keeper. What's your thoughts on Lurzel? I don't rate him. I just don't rate him.
Well, do you know what? He had an exceptional year for him last year. He made his errors, but from the people I spoke to from Germany, just saying that he was a mistake waiting to happen. But they've secured him for £2.5 million. He's got signed Ben Hamer from Leicester as well. So they're not very strong in that department. And I think he has to have another season like last year.
And they need Schindler to step up again. He was brilliant last year. One of their key men. If he dips, they could be in trouble.
Yeah. Are we of the mind that Fulham have got enough quality and potential to actually stay up?
Oh yeah. I don't even think it's a question. I'm not worried about Fulham. If I'm a Fulham fan, I'm absolutely buzzing. Obviously, a couple of months into the season, and you're in the bottom three. You might start thinking, what was you talking about? But when I think about the football they produce, the momentum they've got, actually just the players they've got and the manager they've got, I really like Jakanovic. I'm not worried. I think that they should be well away from trouble. I think, they're going to be hard to play against because they'll keep the ball well, and I think that they'll score, unlike Huddersfield, I think they'll score plenty enough goals.
There's always a club that sort of sleepwalks to disaster. Who are you fearing for this season?
Probably Southampton, I think. And the decline's been coming for a few years. They haven't been recruiting well at all. You know, that was the big strength. You know, they brought in, they sold them on for a profit and then replaced them with the same potential again, and it's just not happening now. And I think, yes, Mark Hughes, he turned them into a better side defensively because they were awful in defence last year. But I haven't said that. I think they only got 8 points from the last 8 games. And it was enough, obviously. They've brought in Yannick.
Vestergaard. Yeah, the big guy.
Which I think is a good signing.
That's an old-school Southampton signing that you can see him having a really good season and being sold on.
Yeah, exactly. And they've, like I said, the Stevens last year was a little bit sort of erratic for me. That's one area that they definitely...
Anyone else for you?
Was sleepwalking.
Yeah.
Watford. I think that Watford's run of constant evolving might trip them up finally. Again, we probably say that every year and they end up in mid-table. But I'm just not sold. I mean, the transfers, De La Feo is obviously good if you can keep him fit. Ben Foster's come in, he's a good keeper, but he was part of a relegation side last year, so he's not that good.
But De La Feo is more of an impact sub almost.
I'm just worried about Watford. I just think that they... I'm not a huge fan of Javi Gracia so far. Did you know they've not scored a goal away from home since he's become a manager? They've certainly not won a game away from home since he's become a manager. They can't score on their travels under Javi Gracia, so that's an issue, obviously, moving forwards. And if they don't arrest that problem, then they're bang in trouble.
Right. So, tin helmet time, you know, taking all that into account, let's start off with top four.
It's hard. I'm not going to have Arsenal outside of the top four. I think they will improve. But you've got to take into account with Arsenal, their away form was dreadful. 16 points last year. They were 11th in the away table. That won't happen again. So they'll improve. So on the basis of that, I'm going to put them in the top four. I'm going to back Sarri and I'm going to put them into third, even though they're not looking good. I think that they might come good. And then I'll go with Liverpool second and City third. And I'm going to go with...
City first, sorry.
And I'm going to go with Spurs fifth, new stadium issues. I'm going to go with a Manchester United disaster season.
I'll go with... I'll start from the top. City, Liverpool, Spurs and United.
Right. And going down?
Watford. I've just said that I don't fancy them. I think Huddersfield with the goal scoring problems. I think that might trip them up. And as much as I'd like Neil Warnock to succeed in the Premier League, I worry that they just haven't got enough in forward areas. So I'll go for Cardiff too.
Yeah, I'll go for Cardiff, Southampton, and one other. Yeah, perhaps Huddersfield. They have strengthened. They've brought in well, I think, but I'm not sure whether they'll have the same luck this season.
Well, romantic that I am, Liverpool as champions. City a close second. Chelsea and United could even miss out on the top four. As for relegation, Cardiff, Huddersfield and Southampton. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.